Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This Slate TV Club podcast is sponsored by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price. Casper mattresses come with free delivery and returns within a 100-day period. And get $50 toward any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/Saul and using the promo code Saul. And by audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio information and entertainment. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free audiobook of your choice at audible.com/Saul. The following podcast contains spoilers. We strongly recommend you watch the episode of Better Call Saul we're discussing before you listen to this podcast.
Blue lights start a blank and those handcuffs click. You know who to call and you better call quick.
Saul, Saul, you better call Saul. He'll fight for your rights when your back's to the wall. Stick it to the man, justice for all. You better call Saul.
Hello and welcome to Slate's TV Club podcast about Better Call Saul, the new AMC drama. We're going to be talking today about episode 7, Bingo. I'm June Thomas, editor of Slate's Outward section, and I'm here today with Seth Stevenson. Hello, Seth.
Hey, June. How you doing?
I'm good. Now, did you come here today on the train, perhaps?
I did. I took the 2 to the 1, which is how I usually get to the Slate office here in the West Village. But we have, as long as we're talking about trains, which is what a coincidence that you brought up trains, June. We have a listener email because last week, you'll recall, we spoke extensively about the Albuquerque train station and Mike Ehrmantraut arriving there. And we were like, why would he take the train from Philadelphia? And I talked a lot about the Amtrak Southwest Chief from Chicago to Los Angeles, what that's like, who's on the train, blah, blah, blah. Then a astute listener named Barton Smith from Utah emailed me and said, sorry, Seth, Mike arrived in Albuquerque on the Railrunner, not on Amtrak. And Barton Smith is correct. In fact, it does appear that he's stepping off of the Railrunner train. But the Railrunner is like a commuter rail that goes between Santa Fe and Albuquerque. I can't for the life of me imagine why Mike would be on that train. I mean, why would he like fly into Santa Fe and then catch a commuter rail to Albuquerque? It doesn't make any sense to me why he would be on that train.
Well, I'm just afraid now because if we are saying or suggesting that that Vince Gilligan and the people who put together Better Call Saul would have made any kind of mistake, we always get a lot of email because there are a lot of people who think that Vince Gilligan is infallible. So watch out. But really, it doesn't make no sense, I would say.
There's a hole in the Gilligan universe here. Early at the beginning of this week's episode, when the cop from Philadelphia, the older cop, was sitting down and talking to Mike, and he says, he talks about jet lag. He mentions for seconds jet lag. And I thought for a moment, I'm so focused on this, on this factoid. For a moment, I thought he was going to say something that was going to explain, like, and Mike would be like, yeah, I flew too, but I flew into Santa Fe or something. I thought, I was like, when are they going to address
and
this?
How did you connect with the train from the Santa Fe
exactly,
airport?
Exactly. When are you going to address this important rail issues? Anyway, thank you, Barton, for that email. Clearing up, well, not clearing up this important issue. Maybe later in the series there'll be some sort of explanation. I mean,
surely it'll be the lily of the valley of Better Call Saul.
Or maybe we should stop digging, June. I mean, some rocks are better left unturned.
So true. So, Seth, let's talk about this episode. It was, I thought, another great one.
I agree.
At the beginning of the show, we had a scene where Mike and Jimmy go to the courthouse to return the young Philadelphia cop's notebook that they took so sneakily in the last episode. And that was an opportunity for Jimmy to deliver a magnificent line where he said to Mike, once again, I do all the talking. That's the only way this works. And you sort of thought, have you met Mike? That's going to happen. You don't need to say that out loud.
Not a lot of talking coming from Mike in general.
Indeed.
And he did his job. He didn't speak up. He was well handled.
Although then he did sort of send Jimmy away, and he had a heart-to-heart with the older Philadelphia cop. We actually learned something from that plot-wise, which was that maybe we're just letting whatever happened in Philadelphia stay in Philadelphia.
Seem to have laid that to rest, and we're moving forward with our Albuquerque storyline. Philadelphia is no longer in the picture.
But I guess what we're holding on to from that is now it really does seem that Mike has this motivation to do the right thing. So we had that little scene. Then we had a beautiful moment with, I think, Jimmy and Kim, where Jimmy, first of all, takes her to this divine office space. It's like the office space in the sky, Suite 801, which really makes Kim's head spin. It's so beautiful. The corner office is so fantastic. Actually, let's listen to a clip from that.
Here we are.
Wow. This is way better than the other one.
You think?
Yeah, who goes in here? Because I'd be all up in here if I were you.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, you're right. It is real nice.
It's a corner office. You gotta go with the corner office.
I was saving it for someone.
Who?
Well, my partner.
Your partner? Who's... Who would that be?
Well, you said you were interested in elder law.
That is so... Thank you. Really. But you know I've got a lot invested at HHM. With what's going on now, I'm closer than ever to partner, like maybe 2 years, and I'm in.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, it's just a thought.
Plus, you know, they put me through law school. I feel like I owe them. Actually, I do owe them, literally, you know? But it's a nice start, Jimmy.
Just, you know, playing with ideas. So I had the extra office and everything.
Yeah, no, I get it. I want to see the kitchen.
So I love that scene, June. One thing we wanted to note is, why is she so impressed by that office? Because the Hamlin office is, in fact, quite nice by its own right.
It's a nice piece of architecture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty schmancy. And this corner office, yes, it's a corner office with a gigantic open, you know, view windows, huge plate glass floor-to-ceiling windows. But it looks out on, like, nothing, on, like, Albuquerque flatland scrub. Not, I mean, there are some fluffy clouds, mm-hmm. a lot of blue sky. I admit that is pretty nice. But, yeah, I'm not sure why she was so impressed by that. Maybe it was the stainless steel.
Well, I think maybe it's the contrast. I mean, the guy is in a one room that he also sleeps in behind a nail salon right now. So it's, yeah. You know, he has gone from zero to, if not 70, a good 40 there.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. It's definitely a step up
yeah,
for
big
Jimmy.
Step.
But, you know, one thing, I love that scene because I thought the actress who plays Kim was so excellent in that scene. I thought she was so great in that.
Yeah, no, she wasn't. There was a moment when she recognized what Jimmy was suggesting, that she just let a look of realization play over her face, like, and it really did seem like surprise. It was really beautifully done. She's a really great actress who I think typically has not gotten the kind of roles that are justified by her talent. She tends to play the kind of hard-edged, impatient, sort of slightly hard woman, often a lawyer. And I just don't think she's had an opportunity to show really what a good actress she is before.
And they have a really sweet rapport. I mean, it's really the idea that Jimmy wants her to have the nice office.
Yeah.
He clearly has such respect for her, and they clearly like spending time with each mm-hmm. other. It's very sweet.
And I think, too, that there are elements of their relationship that remind me of Jimmy and Mike, partly because they do so well with silence. I mean, there's this thing that we've now seen in more than one episode where they have an unspoken, they don't have to say meet you at the elevators. They just kind of meet there and they just, you know, share that cigarette. It's a very, you know, it's a relationship that doesn't require a lot of words. There's a lot of understanding that goes on. It's a very sweet and compatible relationship, I think.
Old shoes, old broken in shoes.
Exactly.
Like you and me, Jane.
Exactly. This Slate TV Club podcast is brought to you by Casper, the online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price. Now, a Casper mattress provides resilience and long-lasting supportive comfort. Casper's mattress is one of a kind, a new hybrid mattress that combines premium latex foam with memory foam. So Casper gives you an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. You get just the right sink, just the right bounce. Two technologies, not just one, latex foam and memory foam, come together for better nights and brighter days. You can enjoy a risk-free trial and return policy. Try sleeping on a Casper for 100 days with free delivery and painless returns. Seth, I believe you know a thing or two about mattresses.
I do. I wrote a story about mattress shopping for Slate several years ago. I still regularly get emails about this. I think it comes up high in the Google results when people are looking around researching mattresses. And I will say anything that helps you avoid walking into the physical mattress store is a godsend. Because what happens when you walk into the brick and mortar mattress store is the salesman comes up and you say, oh, is anything on sale? And he says, everything's on sale. And then he offers you like 4 million different options and you can't compare apples to apples. And it's very confusing. And you only get, you know, 30 seconds to lie down on this thing, and then you just have to make a snap judgment about whether it's right for you. So this it is exciting what Casper is doing, the fact that you could do this online from the comfort of your home, avoiding the mishigas of the mattress store, and getting to try out the mattress at your leisure over an extended period of time seems like a huge deal to me.
Well, they're also a bargain. At $500 for a twin-size mattress and $950 for a king-size mattress. And you can get $50 toward any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/Saul. That's CASPER.com/Saul. Thank you, Casper. So we talked earlier about how there was some really good use of silence in this episode. And one of the amazing parts where quietness and just watchfulness came in was in this amazing set piece in the middle where Mike conducts some surveillance. Let's talk about that amazing scene.
Yeah, so it's like a funky instrumental music score playing, and there's absolutely no dialogue, and we just watch Mike plant this little bait of the money with sprayed, what was it, like ultraviolet, some sort of ultraviolet
reading. Maybe it was luminol, maybe.
Okay, he sprays it on the stack of cash, puts it in a toy truck in the yard, and then he watches the Kettlemans come get the money, go back in their house, ask the kids where the money came from, and all of this with no dialogue whatsoever, all visual. And it was such a bravura television construction class there. I mean, it was like, we don't even need dialogue to tell you an entire story. And it was pretty extended, too. It was a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
Mike's eating stuff. Listening
he ate five apples.
He's listening to the baseball game on the radio. But we know exactly what's going on, even though there's no dialogue. We can see everything develop, and it was very well done. And I think you mentioned earlier this morning when I was talking to you, it was kind of like the Rockford Files, with that funky music playing, and we see the detective doing his thing. And it was kind of a throwback to 1970s style show.
Yeah. And the way that came about because Jimmy was so frustrated with the Kettlemans. I mean, Betsy Kettleman is kind of crazy, and it seemed that she really is crazy. At first, I thought she was pulling a scam, that she was, you know, playing a trick on her husband in a way. She was going to make him take the weight while she had the money. But it wasn't that. She really was self-deceiving, which is, very much a Vince Gilligan something that Vince Gilligan is very interested in.
Yeah, I love that Betsy Kettleman character. The actress is great, and just her upbeat, her moral underpinnings are just not there. She's completely divorced from logic, but she's so upbeat, and it's sort of like The Secret. It's
if I
say it, it's going to happen. And she's got this henpecked husband, and she's like, she'll say things like, always in life, look forward, and you know, what money? I love that character. I'm sort of sad. It seems like their plot has been resolved. We might not see any more Betsy Kettleman, but she's delightful. Also a great mom, you know.
She really did. She cared about her kids. And this reminds me of something that we got another email that we got this week was sort of taking me to task for suggesting that Saul/Jimmy wasn't a good attorney. I think I was talking about competence and how that's something that, you know, you can't have a guy at the center of a show who may or may not be good at his job. So someone took me to task for even bringing that up. But I do think it's, again, a central concern of Vince Gilligan, that he has always been interested in the difference between someone's self-image and their, you know, their view of themselves and the way the world views them. And he's also really good at hiring actors who can show that there's a difference between the way they see themselves and the way the world sees them, which was definitely true of Bryan Cranston's portrayal of Walter White, and I think was also present in Betsy Kettleman. She was just divorced from the real world. You know, even Jimmy lost his temper with her and said, you know, get down from cloud cuckoo land. And it was because she's divorced from reality too much, excessively. You know, Vince Gilligan once told me when I asked him to describe various characters in Breaking Bad, I said, you know, tell me who Walter White is in a few words. And he said, untrue to himself. And I think that's something that he's absolutely fascinated by. And right now, Jimmy and Mike are being true to themselves. And, you know, some of those other characters are not, they're incapable of it, we see.
They are. It's very different. Spiritual tone to this show, where with Walter White, I mean, you're at the beginning, certainly you have sympathy for a guy who's struggling, trying to do the right thing, but he's in circumstances beyond his control, blah, blah, blah. Here, we've got these guys, but, you know, but later on in Breaking Bad, there's just nothing good about Walter White. I mean, nothing to respect about. I mean, he's just a bad, bad guy. Certainly you can respect his ability to act on the things he wants to do or to manipulate people, but he is a bad guy. And that this show is very different. These are people who do have moral underpinnings. You know, the main characters are people who are sympathetic to us, who, you know, they're trying to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. They have these things in their background. Mike certainly has this. We learned, you know, we watched the beginning of this week's episode about Mike having this background that's going to cause him to have concerns about how he lives his life and how he conducts himself. We've got Jimmy, who comes from this background, who's trying to rise above mm-hmm. Slippin' Jimmy from Cicero. You know, he wants to be better than that. And he's got this brother who tries to hold him up to a higher standard. He's got Kim, who tries to bring out his best self. So these are characters we're supposed to have sympathy for, and we're supposed to watch them struggle against with their angels and their demons.
Right.
And it's a very different feel, and I like it. It's a lighter tone. For sure, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's a different feel. And we watch Saul return that money he'd gotten from the Kettlemans because he's doing something for the Kettlemans he doesn't have to do. He's helping the Kettlemans and he's helping Kim at the same time by returning that $1.6 million. And as part of that, he's giving back the, what was it, 30 grand that he got, which pains him deeply, but he's doing the right thing. And
he's doing it in a brilliant manner. I mean, the smarts of that whole enterprise of him struggling with the papers and all of the files from, and just thinking, oh God, I will never figure out a way to save them, or even just to get some form of justice. He kind of looks up at the sky, sees that box. And I guess do you think that right then he saw the seeds of how I can make this right, figuring out where the Kettlemans have hidden the money, which he does in a brilliant way with Mike's help, of then returning the money, of getting them to go back to Kim. Just the brilliance of that, especially because I noticed that the box that he had his money in, this Florsheim box, is also the box where in episode one, in that cold open from the future, that's where he has all his kind of keepsakes and his Saul Goodman, ad VHS. That box is the start of so much in Jimmy/Saul's life.
The Florsheim box. Gilligan is God, June. Continuity stands. Rail runner notwithstanding, the Florsheim box proves it. And the way they executed that with the money, and they take it from the sink in the upstairs bathroom. The other scene I love, besides that funky instrumental with Mike, I also love the way they use that same house, the Kettleman's house, later on when Jimmy goes and he's sitting on the fireplace hearth,
right.
and he says, hey, why don't you go take a look at your money up in the upstairs bathroom under the sink? And they run up and the camera stays put, and you can just hear them running up the stairs. You can then see them on that open mezzanine, and it was really well done the way they used that open house to show that.
Right, and the Foley work, the running up the stairs, the throwing of the cleaning supplies, you see them just tossing it without seeing it. You saw that scene just from the sound effects. It was really beautifully done.
But here's my question about that. And it was very sweet when he brings them back to Kim as a client, and Kim mouths thank you to him, and he's done a good thing on lots of different levels. But here is my question. Why did Hamlin care so much about losing that client? Because Hamlin puts Kim out in the cornfield when she loses that client, and then Kim is incredibly grateful when she gets that client back and says thank you, and it's a big deal for Jimmy to send them back to her. I don't get why, because if they're giving that $1.6 million back to the city government or whatever it is, they're just a middle class. It's not some huge corporate client that's going to be that you're going to bill at $700 an hour for the next 10 years. This is not a gigantic whale that you're landing with this couple. This is just a middle class family that doesn't have tons of, you know, they don't have really deep pockets here or something. So I didn't understand why Hamlin would be upset, why it would be such a big deal to have this client or lose this client.
I have to say I had the same thought because, you know, I thought, well, did they hold back some money? But they wouldn't have been able to because it would have been all about their, you know, their assets and so on. There would have been an accounting. They wouldn't have been able to use any of the money that he stole so pathetically by just writing checks to himself. So I had that same concern, and I don't think that that really made sense. No. It wasn't even a client that Jimmy would want.
Well, I have a couple more questions about the future of this series. But first, why don't we talk about our second sponsor for this week? We are sponsored this week by Audible, a leading provider of premium digital spoken audio information and entertainment. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Content from Audible is downloaded and played back on your smartphone, portable device, or your PC. If you can listen to this TV Club podcast, you can listen to Audible. And right now, you can get a 30-day trial and a free audiobook of your choice at audiblepodcast.com/Saul. Now, Audible has over 180,000 titles to choose from. So to get you started, I am going to make a recommendation. June, lately I have been reading a lot of Elmore Leonard books. Love Elmore Leonard. Unfortunately, he passed away not too long ago. But I love Elmore Leonard. He's got a lot of books, and he's got a lot of books on Audible. So I will just start you off with a couple possible recommendations, ones that I know people will love and that they may be familiar with, in fact. So one is Get Shorty, which was turned into a film with John Travolta about a Miami sort of criminal who gets involved in the Hollywood movie business and finds it's not, in fact, all that different than the criminal underworld to deal with studio executives. It's a great Elmore Leonard book with incredibly snappy dialogue and colorful characters. And if you like the world of Better Call Saul with these sort of criminal elements and these shady people always looking for an angle, then you will love the world of Elmore Leonard.
I was just thinking, it sounds kind of similar that, you know, the underworld isn't that dissimilar from the rest of the, you know, the righteous world.
Yeah, exactly. And another great Elmore Leonard book also available on Audible is Rum Punch, which is about a flight attendant who's helping to smuggle some guns on the airplanes to a criminal in Florida. And that actually, Quentin Tarantino turned that into a movie called Jackie Brown, which is a great movie based on that book. But the book is called Rum Punch. So Rum Punch, Get Shorty, a pair of Elmore Leonard books available on Audible. And you could choose one and get it free as part of your 30-day trial. Again, you can get a 30-day trial and a free audiobook of your choice at audiblepodcast.com/Saul. Well, so this episode closed with Jimmy in his beautiful corner plate glass office kicking the door on the ground. And it seemed like, you know, the dream had died because he was all torn up about having given back that money that he had built. He said, upon this rock I build my church, when he first got that ill-gotten money from the Kettlemans. And now he's giving that money back, and it's almost like he's back at square one. The dream of this beautiful office seems a little bit dead because he gave back $30,000 and because Kim turned him down to become his partner. And now it's like this dream he had, this beautiful dream, is sort of falling apart, and he's crushed. He's literally on the floor of the office, kind of, you know, almost crying to himself, kicking the door. And then his phone rings, and he answers the phone with his crazy high-pitched British secretary voice.
Exactly.
And the message is he's going to soldier on.
Yeah.
He's going to keep going.
So for me, that was very key to this episode. We saw him struggling with Betsy Kettleman's insane disconnection from real life. She just denied everything. And to me, that scene at the end where, interestingly, I thought Jimmy closed the door, even though that the whole office suite was empty, there was no one else there, but he closed the door so that nobody who wasn't there could see him.
A little bit of privacy from no one.
Exactly. Nobody could see him have his meltdown. But I felt like he always knew that Kim couldn't join him. For one thing, she still owes Hamlin because HHM put her through law school. So I don't think he ever truly believed that she would join him. I don't think he ever really thought he could have that fancy office suite, because he is still slipping Jimmy ultimately. And he's trying really hard. He's trying to do good and he's trying to do the right thing. But I also think that he knows that he'll never truly make it to that beautiful, sweet 801.
He's going to have to host a lot of bingo tournaments.
Speaking of bingo, so that was a lovely scene with him doing his bingo calling. And I think he has a great future because he's appreciative of the problems of the senior set, which sometimes takes them a while to find all the numbers on their card. But it was a fantastic Need a Will, Call McGill bingo card with his fantastic image in the middle. And I noticed on the side there was his phone number. And so I actually called that number and I was very impressed with the message that I received when I called.
Why don't we call it right now and see what happens?
Let's.
Okay, guys, I'm picking up the phone.
Our producer, Joel Meyer, is dialing.
Yeah, I mean, should we just give out the phone number?
Yeah. Sure, it's not a secret.
I think that we should, right? It's 505-842-5662.
Hello. You've reached the law offices of James M. McGill, Esquire, a lawyer you can trust. Kindly leave your information at the tone, and Mr. McGill will phone you promptly.
Should we leave a message?
Go for it, Joel.
Okay. Hi, Mr. McGill. Oh, I think it hung up on us.
Yeah.
You can't leave
you
a message.
You can't really leave a message.
Yeah.
Well, June is our resident expert in British accents. Which region of the United Kingdom would you say that Jimmy's from?
I think it's Cicero-shire.
That's about right.
Yeah.
By way of, like, Mary Poppins or something.
I'm always curious about what, like, Jimmy's always gives that. Like, does anybody think that that's not Jimmy?
I don't know. I mean, now people in Albuquerque maybe haven't heard a ton of British accents. You don't hear them every day. You know, it might be just enough. Especially, particularly, let's say you're a slightly dotty 87-year-old person in need of a will. You might not blink an eye.
I mean, especially if you talk to your humble figures and they respond in that voice. So maybe.
Could
sure,
be.
Sure.
Well, that's about it for this week's episode. We want to encourage again. We got a lot of great listener emails this week. We mentioned the person pointing out that it was the Rail Runner, not the Amtrak. We had someone write in comparing the fashion choices of Mike Ehrmantraut and Andy Sipowicz of NYPD Blue. Very astute.
Very astute.
Observation there with the short sleeve button down shirts and the clunky soled shoes. We enjoyed that. And so you can send your emails to podcasts@slate.com. And let us know what you think. Point out what we missed. You know, I bet, June, did you notice at the beginning when Mike and Jimmy are talking, they're sitting on that bench and above them are missing posters?
Yes.
For all these wanted criminals? I bet I would not be surprised if someone from Breaking Bad or someone in the Vince Gilligan universe was in there and we are not quite up enough on the Gilligan universe to have noticed. But
Seth, is that a listener challenge you've just issued?
I have thrown down the gauntlet. Please point out, I'm sure someone out there will notice that. And that if I hadn't mentioned this, they would have let us know how foolish we were not to have noticed.
Well, and the fact that you believe that that is so is really all that we need to know about the Vince Gilligan universe, that we all believe that he seeded a window full of...
It's an Easter egg, just like the phone number.
And listeners, you might, perhaps you have a great alternative explanation for why Mike Ehrmantraut would be on the Rail Runner out of Santa Fe. And there might be some reason. Anyway, let us know. podcasts@slate.com.
All right. Well, thanks for listening to this Slate TV Club podcast. Join us next time when we'll talk about Better Call Saul Episode 8, which apparently is called RICO. This week was bingo, which was so perfect. And check out our other recent TV podcasts about House of Cards and the Americans. Just go to iTunes and search for Slate TV Club. Our producer and phone caller is Joel Meyer. The executive producer is Andy Bowers. Slate TV Club is part of the Panoply Network. Seth, until next week.
Until next week, June.
Oh, I love your French tips, by the way.
Thanks. Appreciate that.
Yeah, no worries. Bye.
Hi, I'm Adam Davidson of NPR's Planet Money and the New York Times Magazine, and I am having so much fun hosting the second season of Working, Slate's podcast about what people do all day. I got to find out what an average day is for Adam McKay. He wrote and directed and produced all sorts of great comedies by Will Ferrell and is now working on a really great financial thriller. I talked to a bail bondsman, the guy at the United Nations who was in charge of stopping Ebola. and a whole bunch of others. Find us online at slate.com/working or just search for us in the iTunes store.